the big issue, reason. The only issue we've ever had with this dynamic is me needing to calm down and like let her go at a slower pace because I'm always so excited for like scenes to be set up.
So
I've seen that dynamic before. I've seen it in a few of my cuckold friends. I've seen that exact same dynamic where the their partner has to calm them down a little bit. Like, there's only so many guys I can fuck for you.
all fired up. You brought up something that was really interesting. I love the analogy of skydiving. And I think it kind of takes us into kind of a deeper question about, maintaining trust, communication, boundaries within your relationships and setting that whole thing up, because the landing is really important. It's like coming down, you know, having the chute actually open, coming down and landing safely seems to make it exciting to go back up again versus having a really rough landing, like skinning your knees, your face against the pavement, like you broke an arm, a leg. You're probably going to be a little less excited to do that jump again. So what is it that you've done to maintain trust, communication, boundaries? How did you go about setting all that up with your partner or your wife? Because you and your wife were the first time you were fully in the dynamic, both agreed upon that, right? Fully, the other times you've tried it out or before?
Yeah, so for my wife, yes. Before she met me, she was super vanilla, super monogamous. And I call it the JJ effect. Did air quotes again for the audio only listeners, that things kind of open up and exploded, like sex exploded into a wide variety of things. And one of those was definitely the cuckold dynamic. I did have a cuckold dynamic in a previous relationship that, once again, there was really never any issues with that dynamic. That was about, I'm bad with timelines, but two girlfriends ago, a while back, let's say 12 years ago, once that cuckold dynamic started, once that little cuck spark sparked into existence, it's always been like a part of my energy, because not to be like super robotic and efficient, but like I'm always trying to take negative energy, transform it into positive. You know, I don't want it to like build and blow up. I don't want to spread the fire to other people. So as someone who's always constantly enthused for new sexual situations, no matter if you're like the coolest guy in the world or the lamest, there's always going to be a percentage where you fail. You do not get your intended. You don't reach your goals. There is stress associated with that. And I've had this, I don't know, it feels like a superpower of that stress. For the most part, I can often funnel it into this kink, whether internally or through friends, through sexting or with my partner at the time, through verbal degradation or whatever. And that also becomes a positive as well. So it's always been with me for like the last, I don't know, 12, 14 years or whatever. But my wife and I, we've been in an ethically non-monogamous situation since the beginning. I actually fell in love with her and I told her we could not be together because she wasn't ethically non-monogamous. And then she started to go to sex parties with me and she's like, you know, and I kind of like this. I was like, yes. It wasn't my plan to convert her, but you know.
Yeah, if it's on their own free will.
For the success.
Yeah. Exposure therapy, you know, works again. You know, the one of the things is like the boundaries. How did you, or what are some of the boundaries and, you know, rules of engagement you set up? Have you had your partners go out and do things independently? Do you like to always be there? Because there's a wide range, just like anything, you know, when it comes to the world of, you know, kink. You know, what are some of the boundaries that help you feel good about the relationship? And do you allow your partner to go out and play solo and then come back? Is that part of the dynamic as well?
Yeah, I've seen infographics online of like all the different variations of cuckold dynamics, of all the little stick figures doing different things and stuff. Ours in particular, and there are a bunch of asterisks for special situations, like when she's on vacation in another city. But in general, as long as it's in the room that I'm in, And I get to, if I want to check her conversations with people on her phone, she has free reign to do whatever. There's other than, you know, sexual safety guidelines, like we always right. have protected sex.
Yeah, yeah.
She does whatever she wants with whoever she wants. I'm in the same room. She never has to ask anything. And then if I can, you know, check the phone convos as well. And then we've been expanding it a bit too over the years, not necessarily because it's a need, but because on her end of things, she doesn't mind at all when I do whatever with whoever, and she's not even there. She often lets me go to sex parties without her. She's, you know, bye, have fun. Like, sometimes doesn't even ask how it went or what I do with other people. So she's very relaxed on that end. I'm more of like, this is like a drug and she's my only dealer, right? So over the years, we've been trying to expand it where it could be a little more more balanced in terms of what is allowed. But through lots of communication and empathy, even if things are completely balanced or symmetrical, we never had an issue about the rules, about what should or shouldn't be the thing. We worked as a team to like slowly change things, but yeah.
That's a big deal. Like that's a big deal, just knowing that transparency. Now, do you like, is it for as you checking? I mean, I know there's a boatload of emotions that come up in it. Is the checking more that it adds to your arousal, or is there a different like worry when it comes to communication? Is that more checking to make sure that the person isn't trying to pull away, or is it a combination? Transparency in the room is pretty, you know, straightforward. It's something that you can share. That's immediately shared energy. But when it comes to like checking the phone and stuff like that, is that a mix of arousal and safety, or what comes up in that?
I would say that's less about arousal and probably, again, I don't know my subconscious 100%, but my feeling is probably similar to if you're blindfolded and someone's walking you down the street and you know that they aren't going to run you into the street sign or like off a cliff, but you're still more comparatively comfortable if once in a while you can actually lift the blindfold up and see, oh, this is where I am. And then you put the blindfold back down again. And for me, I think it's just a simple, you know, proof of the pudding. It's a simple, you know, just checking, yes, this is where we are. The proof matches the feeling. And, I think that's more it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, what would you say embracing cuckolding, how would you say that's impacted the intimacy that you guys get to have without the cuckolding involved? I mean, would you say that there's an impact to that? Have you guys had performance issues? Has it been a situation where now it's become kind of like a need with that relationship?
Great question. So there were a few different parts to that. The first part was, what was the first part of it again?
As far as intimacy goes, how has cuckolding impacted your level of intimacy with your partners? And has it also impacted your ability to sometimes perform, or has it become like this need to have?
Excellent. So it has affected our intimacy in a great way over the long term. I think this particular dynamic really helps relationships last past 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 20 years. As you evolve both your body and your mind and what it is you want, I do not feel any pressure from her end to bear the weight of anything sexually we don't align with perfectly. As a great example, she is someone who loves making out for an extended period of time. She loves long, slow, romantic kisses. For some reason, some weird thing about me, if it's a stranger I just met, yeah, I'll do it as long as you want. Sounds fun. But over time, regardless of who it is or how much I love them, it bores me very quickly. Like, I can only handle like a few minutes and I'm like, all right, what else is there? Then I get very bored of it. And I feel like if we didn't have this dynamic, not just being open, but particularly like she feels more satisfied in that specific way with a specific person, I feel like not only is it like the pressure's relieved, but it's like a good kind of spank. It's like, look, this other person's doing it. They're, you know, they provide this. They're better at it than me. And I know that she's getting what she wants. I don't feel pressured to provide the thing she wants. And then, you know, there's this spice of kink involved as well. That's one of many examples of the intimacy of it. But also on a broader sense, to me, truth is intimacy. That the most intimate thing is when someone can like look you in the face and tell you something that might not make you feel good or something you might not want to hear. And I'll use the semi quote unquote in this case, because I have one of those weird cross wires in my brain where just about everything turns me on. But It is intimate to me when my partner will tell me, you're not the best at this. You're, you know, this guy's built better than you, because that in the healthiest of long-term vanilla monogamous relationships is something that would never come up. They would never verbalize that to their partner, because that could be like a week-long stress and argument until they get back on the same page. But the fact that I have a direct route to her thoughts that way, and it feels so unfiltered, it feels more emotionally, physically, and psychologically intimate.
No, that's huge. So at what point did you find humiliation like a turn on? Was that something that you was always a turn on? So if she says, you know, you take degradation in all ways as far as size, I know that's a big one, like size comparison, stamina, is everything a turn on? One, it seems like you said yes. And then two,
just about.
And then at what point did you find out, like, what was like the first insult that you're like, oh, wait, I'm getting hard? When did that trigger go off for you? Like, I'm feeling humiliation. I should be cowering, but somehow I'm getting aroused by this.
Yes. This might surprise people, but I think my ego is extremely healthy, and I am not lacking in confidence whatsoever. And I think that's kind of the basis of, you know, deep down, I really don't care what people think, and I really don't. And again, this is my guess, and I'm sure about specific things that, ooh, that could really get under my skin. But as far as all of the subjects brought up within a kink scenario, I think having that bedrock of just being like, once it's all over, even if they completely drop the ball on aftercare, I don't reflect back on myself and be like, wait, but is my dick too small? Or, you know... Like, once the scene's over, like, I love myself to a certain level where it's like, it doesn't really affect that. So I think having that bedrock is an important part of it. Trying to remember the first thing that ever...
That sounds like the most healthy, first of all, the most healthy ego I've heard in a long time.
It's amazing. I mean, it's male cucks have to be some of the most psychologically, emotionally stable people I've met in my entire life.
Well, you are definitely fighting primal urges. And I think, you know, moving them, like you said, as far as the ability to transmute negative energy, jealousy, angst, all that cuxitocin, and move what, you know, some people have killed over jealousy and rage into a place of heightened arousal and turn on. That it's like a complete 180. You know, sexual transmutation is something that I'm a bit big with as far as an alchemist working with energy and stuff like that. So the cuck dynamic is something that I really admire, because we wouldn't have hot wives without them, number one. Like that's a thing. All bulls love cucks. Like, you're going to love the cuck.
Oh, there is that.
There, you can't have the hot wife without that. And it provides kind of this whole new space. But I think the stability that you mentioned to be able to process that and move the energy that way is unique and something exciting and actually more powerful than the person who has an emotion come up and can't do anything with it. It can only go one way. So the being able to move all that energy and emotion into another direction, I mean, kudos to you, brother. It's a very powerful thing.
Bravo.
Thank you. And I, actually, by extension of what I said, just to put a big sexy asterisk on it, the stability, the bedrock of confidence comes from, I feel like everything's about perspective. I feel like every single human is simultaneously the greatest human ever and the most pathetic, insignificant thing ever. And because it's true, if you zoom in to just how incredible each individual human body is, or zoom out to just how big the universe is and how insignificant we are, we're all both. And my general logical thought is, where on that timeline led tethering the most insignificant thing to the most significant thing, what serves you best? What is the best place to be? And in some situations, I like to think of myself in the very pathetic, horrible, stupid, whatever end of things. And in other situations, it benefits me to focus on the you're great, you're awesome. And I think if everyone could like tap into, oh yeah, I'm both things and I just need to figure out how to act in each situation, the world would be a better place.
Yeah, I don't know, 100%, 100%. Charlie Chaplin said it as well. He said, if you think of life as a movie, if you look at it from a close-up, it's a tragedy, but if you look at it from a long shot, it's a comedy.
Oh, love it.
That's a great one. That's a great one. So, you know, moving into this, I'm sure, you know, our listeners are dealing with a whole bunch of emotions as you take them through these different things. Still want to go into, you know, more of what happens physically. And we can talk about some more, you know, scenes and different events that were kind of highlights that I want to dive into. But before we get into that, I wanted to find out, what are some of the misconceptions that you think a lot of people have when it comes to the cuckold hot wife lifestyle?
Well, I guess going back to that big infographic with like the 12 types of cuckoldry, or I don't know how many there are, I feel a lot of people, they assume whichever one they've encountered before is the cookie cutter. Oh, that's what the next one is. For instance, a lot of cuckolds, they like the idea of like the quote unquote cheating of like, the woman does something when they're not there and then he finds out afterwards, or he walks into the scene. Well, my flavor is I like as much of it as possible, both before, during, and after. And I've had bulls in the past, they're, I guess, kind of confused with unexpectedly caught off guard of the front row seat with the popcorn style that I am.
Popcorn style cuckolding.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, the popping is very unnerving. No. I guess there's that level of it. I would also say probably they're a bit caught off guard. And this is a guess. I don't really poll them and hand them a questionnaire, but my personality and my sexual lifestyle outside of that kink, I don't think I come off as like super, you know, puddle of pathetic, you know, loser, whatever, degradee, that I'm a true switch. I can be, you know, domiest dom. I'm also a sextrovert. I have sex podcasts. I do icebreakers for one of New York City's largest sex parties. Like, I am very, I don't give off that vibe at all. So I think
you have a lot more range to it.
Yeah. And people find out about it sometimes at these sex parties where I like open that door, like, yes, I'm also a cuck. And then we'll get into, you know, a dynamic or a scene outside the parties. And they'll be like, whoa, didn't know you know, you're at this deep end of the pool as well.
You got to love surprising people. That's the best part of being in the kink community is you never know. You can never judge a book by its cover in the kink community because you just never know. People are going to surprise you every time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a big thing because I would say like sexual range is one of the most exciting things, period. Like knowing that someone has a range, I love all switches. I think, you know, being a switch allows you to get a deeper understanding. And, you know, a quote that I came across, I think it was William Blake, let's see, I have it and I like it a lot. And I think the road of access leads to the palace of wisdom. right? Mm-hmm. And that's, William Blake. And that the idea of trying both sides, being the top, being the bottom, and all that, leads to a greater understanding of it. And one of my friends who was a professional dominatrix for a number of years, she started off as being a professional slave, right? And so a professional sub. And that was a requirement before being a dom. You didn't just come in and be a dom. You had to actually first be a sub. And, you know, she told me that by doing that, it made her so much of a better dom. And I would say even within my own space, you know, I consider myself much more of a bull stag. I mean, I have done cuck scenes. I've done a lot of different things. And every time that I've done it, I find a little bit more about how I can be a better bull. You know, what's it like in the stag role? For all of you who don't know, a stag is someone who also enjoys watching their partner. It's just not necessarily the degradation and humiliation that they get off on. So it's just the idea of the sexual energy and turning that on. But you still have to deal with a lot of the different energies, like cuckolding. It's like you still have to deal with the jealousy and all that and move it into arousal. So I found that whole energetic process extremely it's a turn on, as well as it's fascinating to see what you have to do, like all the wiring that you have to go through, your primal, you know, rage or disgust or all the different things that come up, to be able to take that and then change it into something else. I find that switches do that better than just about anybody. So it's a powerful thing.
Yeah, oh, agreed.
Go ahead, JJ.
Oh, I was going to say, by extension, for all the sexual things I'm not, I often look at them like, if only I was. Like, my wife is extremely bisexual. She loves both men and women. I'm sure the in-betweens and the et ceteras and the all others as well. And I wish I had that in me, because I feel like there'd be so many more possibilities. My body seems to be resistant to many, many off ramps on that highway, but
you can only do so much.
I know.
Yeah, you can only do so much.
Don't push it, man. It's not worth it.
Yeah, if you listen to women complain, you're not missing much.
There you go.
But you know, one of the things I'd love to know is navigating between fantasy and the reality of the experience. Right? Are there any times, you know, what is it like? Do you find that your fantasies match up pretty well with reality, or are your fantasies like going super deep and wild, and then you find that the reality of it maybe doesn't necessarily, you know, match up? Or do you end up ever being like disappointed, like, oh yeah, that was okay, but I was hoping there would be much more, you know, filth or whatever the case may be? How does the fantasy and reality, you know, how do you navigate that?
So for me, and this comes out a lot on my sex podcast, I love games. I love creating structure and having like a very structured situation. Like, I won't just have a guest on my show. I'll have a guest on my show and they have to, you know, ride a Sivian and answer trivia questions. You know what I mean? Like, I love creating structures and frameworks. And often, my wife and her bulls, it's like the opposite. They don't want to feel like they're actors in a play. They want it to naturally develop. And so, ironically, something that causes me stress and anxiety kind of provides that auto-correct rebalancing, is that as much as I want to like structure things like, oh my God, this fantasy would be so hot if I did this, this, and this, and this, I really like tone that down, keep it in check, because if I feel like they're doing something for me, it actually makes it less fun for me. When I feel it naturally develop and I don't have that control, I have like a passive control, like my hands are on the wheel, but I can shout from the back seat, like, brake, you know. when I don't have control of how fast the car is going or where it turns, that actually as a whole is more exciting than if I were to hand the players their scripts and they would, you know, act out a scene in that sense. That being said, you know, I do sprinkle in, especially when like me and my wife have a scene after a hot cuckold scene and she's like giving me a hand job and degrading me, like I will start to verbalize, I'll blurt out everything at that point because I'm not capable of a filter. I'm just everything just like, you know, explodes out.
All your fantasies just come pouring out. along with your wasted seed.
Yeah. So I'm not repressing anything. But when it comes to what she does with her bulls,